Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we learn all about 3D printing from the folks at Sandboxer and Go Engineer, and we hear some tunes from Shrugboat and Dust Bloom. Sandboxer is a 3D art company located right here in the city of Salt. They allow artists and designers to upload their work to be created into a 3D model. The company has designed all kinds of things, from spaceships and zombies to dinosaurs and action figures. Slug writer Rihanna Sonicson sat down with the company's CEO, Burke Fry, to talk about the company and what they do.
Kind of explained to me what Sandboxer is. Like, I went online and I kind of looked at everything, but for people that have never visited the website, and like pretty much in layman's terms, like, how did you develop it?
Okay, yeah, well, it was born from my effort to make the process of 3D printing a lot easier than it was when I started. Because, so 3D printers are really cool, you know, like it's this magic, there are these magic boxes that you hit a button and next thing you know you have a physical object. And so when I discovered that technology and realized like I was part, like I had one end of the technology, like in order for that magic box to make the stuff, you needed a digital file. And like that's what I did. I was a 3D artist. And so I had all these digital files and I realized like, wow, if I like team that up with a 3D printer, like all of a sudden, like what's on my screen is gonna become a physical object. And I became so enamored with the process, I got really deep into it. And I realized like, this is, you know, wow, this is great, but like, it took me a lot of years to develop the skill set to build these models, just so I could enjoy, you know, eventually I, you know, enjoy this 3D print of the things that I made. And so I thought it would be really cool to find a way to take what I knew from like 3D modeling and animation and bring that into a, like create an app and a package that would make it so a layman, just a normal person that has no experience with 3D could engage with this 3D printing technology so that they too could make unique things that are completely custom and then have it manufactured by these printers. And so that's kind of what Sandboxer is all about. We at Sandboxer, like we've been working with a lot of game companies and artists to get, because these are individuals and entities that have 3D stuff. And that's, if you have the 3D files, like that's what you need to make the printer like do its magic. Mm-hmm. And so we've been working with them to get their stuff onto our platform so that then the fans of that artist or of that game or property can go in and like riff off of that content and make something that's completely unique to their tastes and preference.
That's a cool idea. So somebody that has like, say, like I've seen like Trent Culls involved. So if, you know, I wanted something of Trent's and I was a big fan of his, let's say, then I would be able to buy something of his or have something that's like tangible, that it's of his artwork that you could pretty much put together almost. Is that what you're saying? Like kind of?
I mean, that's definitely the gist of it. So you would have content that's already created, but like what's different about, or what's maybe noteworthy about Sandboxer is we're taking, it's not just like a static mesh. So like one of the cool things about like a video game or say a movie is like these artists spend like hundreds of hours and they get really technical and they'll like go in and they'll give bones, they'll put bones into these meshes, you know, so that those bones are then making these crazy, like that's what makes the thing come to life, you know, when you're watching a film or playing a video game. So it's like they're driven, these bones are driven by animations. And so like all this like fancy data is like being captured by our system, right? And so it's not just like a simple like dumb part, it's like a smart part that has like all this stuff captured into it that then Sandboxer gives access to the user. So it's like
for the people that are dumb that don't know how to create.
Yeah. So like you don't have to worry about all that crazy fanciness, right?
Like I'm all breaking down to be like I'm five, and I just want to put something together.
Exactly. Well, that was the thing, like, because it was even for me when I first started trying to 3D print things, like, I had years of experience like 3D modeling and animating. Like I was just blown away at like how much friction I found. It was like, oh my gosh, like this file is still not printing. Like trying to tweak it and edit and you know, I had to like roll my sleeves and get in like really dirty to get something to finally work. Mm-hmm. And so like that's kind of like the, again, that's the battle that we've been engaged in, is just to make something that's like really fun and approachable, right? Like at the end of the day, like who cares like what all the fanciness is going on, but like, yeah, like you'll have, like you said, you'll have content that's made by people that are professionals that are like really good at what they do. They're like really great artists like Trent Call. And in that case, like Trent teamed up with his buddy Admiral to get his 2D drawing turned into a 3D object. And then that 3D object was able to like go to the printer and be made. And so like teaming up with artists and brands to like get their stuff in a fashion that like then that artist or brand can go in and like, okay, so what do we want our fans to be able to do? We want them to be able to do different poses. We want them to have like these animations, or maybe they can like have accessories and we want to attach this hat or this mustache or whatever, you know? And so it's kind of like it's kind of up to the storefront, like person that's setting up a storefront to determine the experience that they want to give out. So some of the companies that we've worked with and individuals like don't want to give a lot of customization. They just think it's cool that their stuff's getting 3D printed, which is, I mean, that's pretty valid too, because I mean, one of the sweet things about a 3D printer is like it's on demand, right? So like instead of this concept, and this is kind of what's, I think, why a lot of people are like really hyped about 3D printing. Traditionally, you've got to like go out to China and like do a mass run of like 10,000, and you have to ship it all the way across the seas, and then you have to find a place to store it while you try to like, you know, like there's retail and inventory issues. But with 3D printers, like the product is the digital file, right? And then when someone's like, okay, now I want the product, like I want it for myself, that's an on-demand experience. So like they hit like print to purchase or whatever, and the machine makes it on the spot, you know? So it's like much more, it's definitely like, I think for a lot of different services and products, I think it's the future, you know, because it just makes so much more sense. It's more economical, it's more green and friendly. You know, I think it's better for like on so many levels, and so I think people are stoked about that, and also like another cool thing about 3D printing is like because it's on demand, it doesn't care like it's a minimum order of one, right? Like everything it makes can be completely different from the one before it, right? And it doesn't affect the cost, unlike other manufacturing models.
How old is the company? Like, how long have you guys been around? And
so I started like exploring 3D printers when Trent showed me like his first 3D print, like that him and Admiral did. I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And that was probably like late 2009. Mm-hmm. Shortly after that, as I like really got into it, that's kind of where the idea for Sandboxer started. So I've been like trying to like figure out how to do this project for a long time. We became like an official company maybe 3 years ago. So we've started like we became somewhat legit back then, and we've been spending a lot of time since then trying to figure out like what, like you said, there's like, oh, there's so many, like you get into it and you're like, oh, then we can do this and we can try that. Like there's so much potential.
It's probably hard to just like get refine one thing part of it and then go from there.
So going from like the sky's the limit to like a pretty focused business model took some time to refine like really what we thought we'd be good at and what would be like a meaningful contribution to this community, because it is like a pretty like this maker community, the people that are like really stoked on doing custom things and designing and doing this stuff. There's a lot of like really great minds and great companies doing some cool stuff, and So we wanted to make sure that we were doing something that was unique, you know, and for us that was like trying to create this platform and creating this platform that allowed, it's like a crowdsourcing of content. So like all these artists like myself and even companies that have like, we have like these libraries of things that we've made over the years, like now we can kind of look at it as like another way to like get it out there.
Express,
like, hey, this is my art.
Yeah.
Like, here's another way to engage with it. Like, prior to that, it was like, you'd have like, you know, you'd have like your CG portfolio, and like there's websites that would like let you like post up images. But for me, it was, and I think the same could be said with like other artists that have been engaging with 3D printing. It's like, it's really amazing to see that, like, to like turn like pixels to atoms, as some people say, like to take this thing that really had no like essence or like no tangible, there was nothing, and now it's like something.
Yeah.
It's just like it's a really cool experience.
And I think to have like any artist or any, even like when I watched your Vimeo on that child, like playing, you know, and like kind of like in their mind, I think it is very childlike, where it's very, you start out with something and then you want it tangible, you want it something to hold, something you've made. And I think that was the coolest thing, like when I was watching it, that I was like, somebody that reads comic books and it's like, you know, always into sci-fi stuff and different weird things, you know, like to me it was like, oh, I could take this from my brain and like literally put it on a shelf. Like, I think that's pretty neat, you know?
It's so rad.
It's like pretty awesome.
I'm really, like, I feel like what Sandboxer's a part of and like what other people are doing in this industry, like it's still pretty like nascent and new space, like relatively, like it's been around for a while, but like just recently, like say like the last 6 or 7 years, like people are like really trying to like dig in and improve the technologies, like the actual printer, so they can do cooler and radder stuff.
Right.
But also like on the software side of things, which is kind of where we lie, like we're also trying to like find, like people are like us are trying to find ways to like get this into the hands of creatives like yourself, you know, that like, you know, you've got these, like you're passionate about like comic books and like you probably have like your favorite artists and you have like your idea of what's cool with this technology. Like it's a really great way to make those things reality.
For more info on the company and to design your own artworks, visit them online at sandboxer.com. And that's sandboxr.com. Shrugboat is an all-instrumental electronica band from Salt Lake City that was mainly comprised of Brad Butler, who plays along with other folks like Camille Ritchie and Lindsay Heath on occasion. In 2012, he released the debut album for Shrugboat called Sea Ghosts. This is a song called The 3D Islands. Thank you. For more information on the band, visit them online at facebook.com/shrugboat.
I'm Rebecca.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Cherry. And if you like your geek news with a bit of a twist, then you'll love
Hello, Sweetie.
Hello, Sweetie podcast brings you the latest and greatest geek news and information from an all-female panel.
We'll bring you the most recent information about movies, TV, comic books,
video games, roller derby, pop culture, and more. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
For your weekly dose of geek culture from a female perspective, tune in to
Hello, Sweetie.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week starting May 27th and stretching us into June. Unbelievable. Lots of great stuff in there, and I would encourage you to go to slugmag.com, hit that calendar. There's always great listings of new events going on into that thing. I found lots of goodies this week, starting on Tuesday, May 27th with Toon Yards. They're playing at Urban Lounge. Meryl Garbus, amazingly talented woman. She plays a lot of instruments on her records. She brings a band along. Should be an amazing show. Probably going to sell out. You might want to jump on that one early if you can. Jenna Torturers, people love those guys in Utah. They're playing up at Kamikazes in Ogden. That should be a blast of a show as well. Wednesday, May 28th, Margot and the Nuclear So-and-Sos at Urban Lounge. Another awesome, exciting show coming to town early in the summer. That is going to be great. They have a fine new record out. I am so excited for that one. Two big nights at Urban Lounge in a row that week. Skipping ahead to Friday, May 30th, a couple of really cool things happening in Ogden, my hometown. It's the start of the Ogden Folk and Bluegrass Festival, and on Friday, it's Alejandro Escovedo as the headliner. One of my favorites. His band opened for the Sex Pistols' final show in San Francisco back in the 70s. He is still rocking now. Always a great show. And Zodiac Empire, local band, playing up at Brewski's in Ogden. So you have a little post show to go to right up there after you stop at Fort Buenaventura for the Folk and Bluegrass Fest. Saturday, May 31st, the Salt Lake Lions Pro Ultimate Frisbee team, recently featured on this very fine podcast. They are playing against the Seattle Raptors at Taylorsville High School. Sunday, June 1st, one of the best bass players you've ever seen in your life or will see, Victor Wooten Band. Victor Wooten is the man. They're playing at the State Room. And then on Monday, June 2nd, Black Label Society, Zach Wilde, of course, famously from Ozzy's band, and of course, his own Black Label Society, rocking out of the complex. I highly recommend you talk to Kevin Kirk at the Heavy Metal Shop and ask him for some Zach Wilde stories sometime. Always a hoot. That's your weekly daily calendar. Go online, check them out. There's lots of new stuff on there every day. You can add your own listings for free, and for a mere $5 a month, $50 a year, add some quality links to your own content. Stay tuned. Dust Bloom is a four-piece hardcore band from Salt Lake City that originally formed in the fall of 2011 and is comprised of Cameron Jorgensen, Ian Cooperstein, Christopher Peterson, and Chris Jensen. In 2012, the band released a self-titled split album with the band Huldra, contributing three tracks each, and then they collaborated on a seventh. This is a song called High Art, BMWs and Bondo from that 2012 split with Huldra. We'll be right back. information on Dustbloom, check them out at facebook.com/Dustbloom. We are very happy to welcome Kirk Brown, who some of you might know as Circus Brown of the legendary KRCL radio program, of which he hosts. But today he is here to represent Go Engineer, a local company that deals in 3D printing. Last year at Crosslake City, Circus demonstrated the capabilities of a large U-print printer at the event. First, thank you for coming in.
No problem. Thanks
really
for having me.
I appreciate that. And I am going to fully admit right at the top that I'm a total dumbass when it comes to all things 3D printing. So this is going to be great and educational for me and hopefully others.
All right.
First, why don't you just kind of give us the breakdown on what Go Engineer is as a place of your employ?
Well, Go Engineer has been around for over 25 years as a CAD reseller. We're currently the largest SolidWorks reseller in the North America. SolidWorks is a 3D design CAD tool. It's becoming the mainstream CAD design tool for mechanical engineers. And then we're also either number one or number two, it depends on what year it is, reseller for Stratasys, which is a rapid prototyping machine manufacturer out of Minnesota. So these they sell two types of machines. They sell Objet machines, which are manufactured in Israel, and Stratasys also makes their FDM product, which I'll explain all those fancy words as we go along, manufactured right here in the United States in Eden Prairie, Minnesota.
Oh, okay, nice. For folks like me out there in the world with not much knowledge into this, it seems like 3D printing's kind of come on as something really in the public consciousness that I see a lot more about just in the last few years. But obviously there's history behind that, so why don't you just tell us a little about the evolution of this invention, I guess, basically, for lack of a better term.
All right, well, the company that we sell for is Stratasys, and they started in the late 80s with their form of rapid prototyping, which is called FDM, Fused Deposition Modeling. And what that is melting a substance, like mostly what we use is ABS plastic. You melt ABS plastic, you extrude it through a really small nozzle, and you lay it down layer by layer on top of each other to create your model. And you're creating this from a 3D CAD drawing that somebody has designed. They started in the late 80s. I got my first prototyping machine in 1998.
Oh, okay.
And
so
back then,
yeah.
We've been doing this for a while now, and you know, for the last 12 years, people would say, "What do you do for a living?" And I try to explain it, and their eyes would gloss over, and they wouldn't hear anything I was saying. And even if I handed them a part, I do this. Oh, that's really cool. So you just cut this out of a piece of wood or something?
Right. Yeah.
So we got our first machine in the late 90s, 1998. It was called the Stratasys Genesis machine. It printed with polyester plastic, actually.
Okay.
So same thing, melted the material, extruded it. It's just gotten better over time.
Yeah.
And then with what you're seeing now with all these hobbyist machines is patents that Stratasys held that have expired, and now all these people are benefiting off of that, and they're making these more affordable machines. Because our machines are the industrial strength machines.
Yeah.
The pricing starts
in the basement of your house or anything.
these machines start at like $10,000.
Okay.
Just under $10,000. So the fact that there's people making these machines that are hundreds of dollars and people can have them and play with them and make stuff, although they're not making as nice parts as ours.
Sure.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah.
And so you'll see there's patents expiring this year. There's a really big patent that expires in 2021. So I think I at least have a job for another 7 years.
There's a chance of it being taken over by these smaller.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know what's going
to
happen.
It pays to have history and experience,
you know,
right?
There'll be small companies that will start off and turn into apples, I imagine.
Was the sort of evolution of this, I don't know, of this technology, was it driven by a certain industry like, say, medical devices or automotive or something like that? Or is it just an amazing thing you can do anything with?
Well, it's everything. It's anything. I've printed everything, I think. I don't think there's anything I've printed
anything
from
edible.
Some of the machines that I used to maintain and we used to sell, people have converted, instead of printing with a plaster powder, they're printing with sugar, powdered sugar.
Yeah.
So there is edible stuff. there's a printer that came out a few years ago that prints in chocolate. That's about $5,000, I think.
Wow.
So there is about anything out there, and you know, and just I print a lot of parts for people, for companies, and all around the world. I've printed at the same time. I've printed the new version of the a small scale model of the Panama Temple.
Oh wow!
Right next to sex toys in the same build the orders came in on the same day. You know?
Right.
And
right.
I don't think anybody knew that anything was tainted. You know, those toys were still good.
For say you're a sex toy company, right? Is this like a far more economical way for them to do business than it used to be, or is it just more, are they able to do more kind of specific orders of what people want, or what's
you
the advantage?
Could do, it's easier to do custom manufacturing because you can do one-offs really easily.
Okay.
Somebody was just sending me a website that you can go to and design your own phallus and have a file that you could print up.
Boom. And you have one, and you order one, and you get one printed, right? Yeah, okay.
So it's not necessarily that it's less expensive. But, you know, for a huge production run to make a lot of money, you're not going to 3D print everything.
Right.
But it's becoming more relevant to do that. I'm working on a project right now where I'm printing hundreds, almost 1,000 parts at my office. And it's something that, you know, it would have cost that company five times or more the amount of money just to get the molds made than what I'm doing. So for low run production, this 3D printing is exactly what they're looking for.
And is that part of Go Engineer, what you guys do? Or are you guys more the bigger projects, but do you get some individual one-offs? I want one of this.
Well, I do a lot of stuff. So, you know, our main focus is selling machines. You know, we sell dozens of machines every month. I mean, there's people buying machines like crazy right now.
Yeah.
So another part of my job is I go out and I repair the machines. I just got back. I was just in Boston a week ago at the Stratasys Objet Technologies headquarters in Billerica, learning about a new machine that's coming out this summer that I'll have to know how to repair.
Okay.
And then since we have a lot of machines, you know, the office in Salt Lake, I got like five or six machines. Then we have offices from California to Louisiana, and we've got several machines in every office.
Yeah.
So those machines, we're printing parts for people that are wanting to buy machines. So we're doing benchmarks for them and proving their concept. Like this is what you can do. Yeah. This is exactly what you guys need. We're also printing parts for people that say, you know, I'm not ready to buy a machine yet.
Gotcha.
And or they're like, we're never going to buy a machine, but I really want to, you know, it might be just a guy in his garage that's come up with some invention and he wants to have this thing made. And, you know, actually at Craft Lake City last year, I met a guy who had an invention and he saw the machines and said, wow, I need to meet with you guys.
Yeah.
And one of our CAD designers at Go Engineer and myself spent a couple months working with this guy, and we finally got his part in his hands to where he could take it to manufacturers, go to China and say, I need to have these made. How much is this going to cost?
Okay.
So
they can use it as a prototype for when they do go to mass produce something.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. So where does your personal interest or background, how did it feed into this kind of line of work?
You know, it's crazy. I started at Go Engineer. Just a friend of mine said there was an opening. Do I know how to use a computer? Can you edit a Word document? And I was I became the marketing department for Go Engineer. So when I first started at Go, I was doing mailers. You know, I started in 97, so I've been working for this company for a long time. And in 97, you know, you did a mail campaign, you did a fax blast campaign, did an email campaign, just to get people to come in and see our SolidWorks and see what how much better this CAD product was than what people were currently using. About a year after working there, about a year, we got our first 3D printer, and nobody was in the office that day except for me. And they said, well, the guy was there installing the machine. He says, somebody needs to learn how to use this.
Boom.
So that's how I got into 3D printing.
Nice.
And I pretty much was the only one doing it for years at our office. And everybody would come to me and just say, oh, we'll print this. We're going to go sell some software to a guy. This is what they designed. Make this part for him. This is their part. And, you know, it was something that it just gave a little bit more value to our demos, like handing somebody a part and saying, well, this is how easily we can design your part in CAD. Oh, and here's a part that we printed for you just to show you that we can do it.
You can feel it. You can see it.
Yeah. So I ended up moving to the Go Engineer Denver office and was working out of there for a couple of years in 99 to 2001. And so many people, some new machines came out. We started selling some other machines and some of the latest technology. We started seeing so many people come to us and say, I just need to have one of these printed, because, you know, a machine back then was like 70 to 90 grand.
Right.
And not, there's only the largest, you know, aerospace companies were buying the machines at that point.
Right.
And then, you know, the machines weren't quite accurate enough for the last product that they needed to do. It was good for some initial prototyping, but they weren't really accurate. The machines that were back then that everybody used if they needed something really accurate was called SLA, and that was uses a laser to solidify a vat of a resin, kind of like a plastic-like material.
Right.
And you know, if people are wondering, want to see something cool that 3D printing does, I mean, there's tons of stuff you see every day, you know, kids getting prosthetic limbs and all sorts of cool stuff is going on. One thing that I see so much, and I'm kind of proud of, if you Google Beauty the Eagle, it's a really sweet story about a bald eagle that got shot by a poacher and had the top half of her beak removed. And she was living in a landfill in Alaska, and some people brought her in, took her to a raptor sanctuary in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and she just had to be hand-fed. Usually if a raptor, periodically over their life, they'll lose a beak, they'll knock it off. It's like a toenail and grows back, but this, because it was shot off, it never grew back.
Wow.
So she couldn't feed herself, so the animal sanctuary was feeding her. One of my customers up in Idaho saw this and was like, you know what, I can make a new beak for this bird.
Wow.
So he had a 3D scanner, and he would scan in her, and then he would scan in different skulls that the bald eagle, and he'd scan in deceased skulls that this sanctuary had, and then he would do a Boolean operation, which is just removing one model from another, just a subtraction in the CAD software. And he would send me down these different beak models, and I would print them at different scales in plastic. And it was about a year or so that we did this. It was around 2003. And finally, they got to the point where we had a beak that worked, and she could clean herself and feed herself, and she was fine. And then they manufactured a lightweight, really strong one for the final product. But it was one of these first prototyping things I worked on. And like in 2007, it was on every news outlet, CNN, Fox News, everybody had it. And
that's great.
Almost once a month, somebody will post it on my website, on my Facebook, like, have you seen
just
this?
Saw and I'm all,
I see that. That's all right.
That is awesome.
So there's
that's really cool.
It's one of those things that I'm pretty proud of, and you know, it's where this technology is going. Who knows where it's going to stop?
That's amazing. Limitless opportunities.
I work mostly in different kinds of plastics, and then you're going to see metal coming online the next 10 years. I mean, it's already started, but the machines are, you know, millions of dollars.
Yeah, it's
really
not economical right now. Amazing. We're going to point people towards GoEngineer.com if you want more info on the company.
Yeah.
And Circus, tell us where and when we can hear the radio show.
I am on 90.9 FM KRCL every Friday night from 8 to 10:30 in the evening. Your late night drive time.
Your late drive going out time. Perfect. You're right in that zone, that sweet spot. Well, awesome. Circus, thanks so much for coming in. We really appreciate it. And we definitely know more now.
Yeah, I hope so.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much for listening to Slug Soundwaves, and for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to go online and visit us at slugmag.com. We're going to have Jeffrey Stedman back in the studio from Yelp, Utah soon to talk about brew pubs in affiliation with our awesome annual beer issue that's coming this June. We want to hear what your favorite joints are to get a pint and get some grub. Send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com, or hit us up on Twitter @SlugSoundwaves, or on Facebook at facebook.com/SlugSoundwaves. We just might bring up yours suggestion on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is one Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. Main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd. Technical design by Kate Colgan. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be talking to the folks from Broovies, and we will have Jimmy Martin in to tell us about all the big summer movies heading our way. Thanks for listening.